Okay, folks, so for the second session, there are two videos that we're going to be looking at. All right, there will be two videos dealing with the question of identity and gender. So they'll play back to back, and then afterwards we will continue with the lecture.
University of Washington, find out. Are you aware of the debate happening in Washington State around the ability to access bathrooms, locker rooms, spas based on gender identity and gender expression?
I think people should be able to have access to a facility. I think bathrooms could and potentially should be gender neutral because there doesn't need to be a classification for differences.
I think people definitely should have the ability to go to whichever locker room they want.
I feel like at least public universities should do their best to accommodate for those who do not have a specific gender identity.
You know, whether you identify as male or female and whether your sex at birth is matching to that, you should be able to utilize the resource.
Well, I told you that I was a woman. What would you say?
Good for you. Okay. Like, yeah.
That's me too. By the way. Really?
If I told you that I was Chinese, what would you respond to?
I mean, I would be a little surprised. I would say, good for you. Like, yeah, you are.
I would maybe think you have some Chinese ancestry.
I would ask you how you feel like that conclusion and why you think that conclusion.
I would have a lot of questions just because on the outside I assume that you're a white man.
If I told you that I was 7 years old, what would you respond to?
Okay, so all of that to say that we have a major problem on our hands. Do you think we have a problem with our young people in our universities? This is where they're being trained mentally, and this is the future of our world. And so are we going to have the transmitter? Sorry, I'll run from the back. Oh, is it running out? So you want it from the back? Okay. Yeah, okay. So what does this tell us? Well, this is what is being taught in our universities today. This is what is being taught to our young people today. And just recently, at a number of universities in Ontario, at Trent University in Peterborough, and also the University of Ottawa, University of Ontario Institute of Technology, and now at Ryerson University in Toronto, and another university out in British Columbia, they are now having conferences called Conferences Against White Privilege. And if you want to know whether or not you have white privilege, they give you a chart that you could tick off a number of characteristics. Are you a white man? Yes. Are you a Christian? Yes. Are you a Protestant evangelical Christian? Yes. You have white privilege. And you have to realize that your white privilege has caused oppression and suffering to countless indigenous people. And they will tell you how the white people were the colonizers, that we colonized this land. And if you're looking at the debate right now between the indigenous people and this country, the argument is exactly what I just told you. You white guys are the oppressors. You came into this country, which was ours. You took our land, and now you're subjugating us, which is basically the history of the whole world. All of history is warfare, invasions. When the Aboriginal people came here, they came across the Bering Strait, and they fought against rival tribes. The Iroquois wiped out the Huron. No one talks about this, because it takes away from the storyline of the white oppressing man, the colonizer, and so forth. And so now we've got people staging protests. For example, in Toronto at the Old City Hall, there is now tents outside with indigenous people claiming, "You took our land," et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you keep living in this atmosphere of oppression and that the white man is the oppressor, there's no room for progress here, because you always feel you're subjugated. You always feel that it's their problem. And so you live a lifestyle of always blaming that person. That person becomes the scapegoat for all your problems. This is exactly what's happening right now in South Africa with white farmers being brutally murdered by the blacks in South Africa today. The same argument. You guys came here, you took our land, and now we're getting even with you. We're getting back at you. So what we're going to do now is we're going to be looking at the question of transgenderism. Did I turn this off? It's off, right? Okay. And when we talk about transgenderism, we're talking about this idea that gender, as you heard in this video, gender is not something that is determined by biology. It is socially constructed. And you'll notice that the students made that claim, that gender is not established, that it's fluid, and so forth. And so I want to talk a little bit about this whole transgendered issue. There's a picture here on the screen of this lady, Rachel Dolezal. And the interesting thing about this lady is that she was part of a black movement in the United States, but to their surprise, they realized she actually isn't black. That's her on the left side. And on the right side, she grew her hair out, she dyed her skin, and she was a white woman who claimed to be a black woman. Well, she was eventually fired from this movement she was with in the United States, and the reason why she was fired is because she lied about her race. But wait a minute. If sex can be determined by your personal choice, well, why can't your ethnicity be determined? If I can claim to be a 6-foot Chinese woman, then I'm a 6-foot Chinese woman. And if this white woman believes that she's black, who are we to tell her she can't be black? But she was fired for that. So now what's happening in Ontario is, you probably heard of the case of the foster parents in Hamilton who had their children taken away from them by the Children's Aid Society because they were Christian parents. And they told the children that the Easter Bunny didn't exist. Neither did Santa Claus. Guess what the Children's Aid Society did? They took the child from their care. Because they said that they were enforcing their Christian fundamentalism on the children. Well, they went to court. They took the case to court. Thankfully, the court sided with the parents. And the judge basically rebuked the Children's Aid Society for violating their charter rights and freedoms, the freedom of religion and conscience and so forth. But this is nothing new, folks. This is happening all over the place. Imagine this. Children now are being told that if you think you're a girl and you're a boy, we will actually help you transition. They will actually give children hormone-blocking drugs. So if they're boys, they will have hormone-blocking testosterone and feed estrogen into their body. If they're girls, they will block their estrogen hormone levels and give them testosterone. So children who are in one body, a physical boy body, and they think they're a girl, what our government is saying, under the blessing of Kathleen Wynne, who hopefully will be out in the next election, let's pray hard for that, Under the current legislation, if a parent objects to that, like a family did in the state of Oregon in the United States, a child wanted to transition. The child complained to the school that the parents were against his transitioning to a girl. The court took the child out of their care. So the question is, who owns your children? Do you own your children? Do you have the right to teach your children about human sexuality? Or does the state own your children? Well, it's beginning to look very much like a dictatorship. It's beginning to look a lot like the communist regimes, totalitarian regimes, where the government controls everything. Now they're compelling our speech. We're being told not to use certain words. So Mr., Mrs., Ms., stop using that. Use neutral words. A professor whom I know from the University of Toronto, you probably heard of Dr. Jordan Peterson, got into a lot of trouble for refusing to call people by their preferred pronouns. So, for example, if someone's not male or female and wants to be addressed as Zer or Z or Zim, then you have to accommodate them. Okay, well, what if I want to be addressed as Your Majesty? Can you address me as Your Majesty? Well, if I think I'm royalty, am I not royalty? Isn't it what you think you are? And now, I told my students at Toronto Baptist Seminary, I said, you know, you guys are all studying some of them are studying to do their masters. I told them, if you identify as a Master of Theology graduate, then you're a Master of Theology graduate. You don't have to finish the courses. Imagine doctoral students across the country. They're studying for their PhD, and then they say, I identify as a PhD. Well, in that case, you're a PhD. You don't have to complete your course. You don't have to defend your thesis. You're a PhD. The ramifications of this is utter madness. So children are allowed to choose their gender, but yet we don't let them drive cars. We don't let them vote. We don't let them drink alcohol. We don't let them join the army. Why? Well, they're not old enough. So if they're not old enough to drive, old enough to smoke, old enough to drink, they're old enough to decide what their gender is? This is a serious contradiction going on here. If we can get the next slide. Well, there she is. She's as white as the white-driven snow. There's Rachel Dalzell holding a child there. That's the woman who later claimed that she was black. Can we get the next slide? An American civil rights activist and former African studies instructor, Rachel Dalzell. She was the president of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Don't you just love that term, colored people? What does colored people mean? Black people. Well, isn't white a color? Isn't white a color? Last time I checked, white is also a color. But notice how this term is being appropriated for certain people, and therefore people who are oppressed and need protection. She was a member of this group, the NAACP chapter in Spokane, Washington, from 2014 until mid-2015. She resigned following allegations that she had lied about her racial identity and other aspects of her biography. But what if she believed she was black? Dalzell's critics contend that she has committed cultural appropriation and fraud. Well, if you're a boy and you claim to be a girl, aren't you appropriating, aren't you sexually appropriating? No. Dalzell contends her racial identity is genuine and while not based on biology or ancestry. That's what the transgendered folks are saying. In November 2015, television interview, Dalzell publicly stated for the first time since the controversy began that she was born white. Now listen to what she says in the next slide. For me, how I feel, please catch that, how I feel is more powerful than how I was born. What were those students saying about whether you're male or female? It was based on how you feel. I mean that not in the sense of having some easy way out. That has been a lifelong journey. This is not something that I cash in, cash out, change up, do at a convenience level, or to freak people out, or to make people happy, she says. If somebody asks me how I identify as black. Nothing about whiteness describes who I am. So, if we can do this on the sexual gender level, why not the racial level? Honest question. Next slide. Well, here's a white man who claims to be a Filipino woman. He's a white man. All I have to do is go to YouTube, click Tucker Carlson, Fox News, man claims to be Filipino woman. Nice guy. But he believes he's a Filipino woman. Well, he claims to be female, although he has a male body, claims to be Asian, although he's Caucasian. So is he a Filipino woman? Well, according to the common trends of our society, he would have to be. Because that's how he feels. He doesn't identify as a white male, but as an Asian Filipino woman. If we can get the next slide. Here's a 52-year-old father who believes he's a 6-year-old girl. This is a man who was married, had children, left his wife, identifies as a 6-year-old girl, and there he is sitting in the middle with a dress on. It's a 6-year-old girl with stubble on his face. And the family is so proud to have him. And apparently they have grandchildren. Now imagine what this guy is doing with their grandkids. So people look at this, and instead of saying, this man needs to be in a mental institution, we're saying, this is so liberating. He is so liberated. We really appreciate how he's come out of the closet and identified as a 6-year-old girl. In the old days, this man would be put in a prison or in a psychiatric ward. Today, we say that this is progressive. This is wonderful. We can get the next slide. And then we got Sean King. Claims to be black, defends black rights, but there's only one problem. He's white. But he claims to be black. So if we get the next slide, there he is as a kid. Yeah, he looks black. He looks a little more Latino than anything. But he claims to be black, but at the next slide, he was arrested, and the police records show that he is white. That doesn't seem to bother Sean King, because he is whatever he thinks he is. Let's get the next slide. And then we've got Bruce Jenner. Remember Bruce Jenner, the Olympic award winner? Wheaties. Remember the Wheaties box? And now he's gone Fruit Loops. Now, Bruce Jenner was made famous because of his Olympic achievements, and then he ran that silly Kardashian thing. Anything with the Kardashians is just total, you know that's total madness. Now he identifies as a woman, and he's become the poster child for the liberation movement. And here he is on Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair has Bruce Jenner on the front cover, of course, dressed up as a woman. People look at this and say, liberating, progressive. And what they're not telling you, folks, is the following. Some stats I want to share with you on this whole transgenderism issue. That this is what scientific stats are showing about transgenderism. 80 to 95% of children with gender identity conflict, so little children, go through phases. We all see that. We went through phases when we were kids. And you've heard of the proverbial tomboy, you know, the little girl that is wants to play like a kid, like a boy, and we say, well, she's just being a tomboy. That's normal in child maturity. Children are still developing. They're trying to figure something out about themselves. But here's what the stats show. 80 to 95% of children with gender identity conflict grow out of it. It's a phase that they go through. And they grow out of it, and they become mature boys and girls. 41% of people who identify as transgender will attempt suicide at some point in their life. It's 41%. People who have had sex reassignment surgery, that is, they transition sexually, in other words, men who transition to have female body parts or men or women who put on male body parts, people who've had sex reassignment surgery are 19 times more likely to die by suicide. And these are stats based on data collected by the authorities in the United States that registers deaths and suicides and so forth. But no one wants to talk about that because we're told that this is just normal. We're being told that the reason why these people commit suicide is because of right-wing Christians. It's because we are oppressing them to think that that's not how God made you. And so most of the time, notice who they'll blame. They'll blame conservative Christians. And that's why they commit suicide. When in fact, stats show that they have a higher rate of suicide because they don't know who they are. They're struggling with their identity. That's what the science shows. If you've been listening to what's going on in Toronto, there's a man by the name of Bruce MacArthur, a homosexual, who had a sexual relations with other men, but killed them and buried their bodies in planters. And he's now under 6 counts of murder. Imagine if that was a heterosexual male, a white heterosexual male who did this. We would be hearing about homophobia till the cows come home. We'd have national days of remembrance for every one of them. But because he was a homosexual killing other homosexuals, we don't hear that. Now they're blaming the Toronto police. It's the Toronto police's fault for not following up on their community and so forth and so on. And so this is a common reoccurrence that we keep seeing all the time in our society. We can get the next slide. So here's the gender-neutral pronouns. And incidentally, if you want to know where that came from, this comes from the Kitchener Counseling Services. Kitchener-Waterloo Counseling Services. And this is what your tax dollars, your provincial tax dollars, are paying for groups like this. And so this is a list, not exhaustive, but merely meant to provide examples. So some people want to be referred to by pronouns like, if you're talking about them, they sometimes want to be called in the plural. So herself, and on and on goes the names. Some people don't identify as human, some identify as animals. So there's one guy who calls himself worm self. So he identifies as a worm. Others identify as animals, like a fox or a wolf. Look at the next slide. Here's a woman in Norway who believes she's a cat. And she actually goes on all fours and meows and hisses at dogs when they show up. Now, she doesn't use the litter box for some reason. She still seems to use the bathroom like everyone else. Now, we look at this and people say, well, she's just being herself. No, there's something wrong with her. There's something mentally wrong with you if you think you're a cat. And you're meowing and you're walking on all fours. And so, again, people like this would be regarded as having some form of mental illness. But our society says, no, this is liberating. Then we wonder why the West is collapsing. We wonder why God is bringing judgment on our nations. Why God is sending Muslims into the West. Not just so that we can evangelize them. He's bringing them into the West as a judgment against us. There's a reason why these things are happening. We've turned our backs on Him. We've turned our backs on the One who is the source of goodness and morality and justice. And as William Penn once said, if men will not be ruled by God, they shall be ruled by tyrants. We can get the next slide. Let's apply this to a condition called body integrity identity disorder. There are some people who feel that their limbs don't belong to them. What is this condition? Also referred to as amputee identity disorder, it's a psychological disorder in which an otherwise healthy individual feels that they are meant to be disabled. Part of a general neurological order called apotemnophilia. It's not medically recognized by the American Psychiatric Association. BIID is related to xenomelia, which is the oppressive feeling that one or more limbs of one's body do not belong to oneself. It's typically accompanied by the desire to amputate one or more healthy limbs. It also includes the desire for other forms of disability, as in the case of a woman who intentionally blinded herself. It can be associated with sexual arousal based on the image of oneself as an amputee. The cause of BIID is unknown. One hypothesis states that it results from a neurological failing of the brain's inner body mapping function, located in the right parietal lobe, to incorporate the affected limb in its understanding of the body's physical form. So what is this saying, folks? There's some people who say, this arm is not mine. I hate this arm. I want to cut it off. Others will say, this leg is not mine. I want to cut it off. There's people like that. Now, these limbs are healthy. It's not that they're cancerous. There's no gangrene on them. They're healthy limbs, but they want to get rid of them because they feel it's not part of them. Or these eyes, I don't want to see. These are not my eyes. And they want to blind themselves. Well, anyone in their right mind would say, hey, you need help. You shouldn't do this. You're going to hurt yourself. But if this is how if they identify as amputees, I mean, it's their body, right? You can't tell me what to do with my body. Isn't it my body? Well, it works both ways. If you're going to say that abortion is allowed because it's a woman's body, which it's not, the child is not her body, the child is a distinct entity. But if this arm is part of my body, can't I do with it as I please? So can I pay a doctor, a physician to remove it? Let's look at the next slide. Here's some examples. This woman in the middle had her leg amputated because she wanted to identify as an amputee. She didn't feel that limb was part of hers. That woman on the right took Clorox and poured it on her eyes. She had healthy vision. And she poured this acid in her eyes to go blind. And then here on the left, you got a man and a woman. She's on a wheelchair, not because she needs a wheelchair, but because she amputated parts of her body. So is this okay? Can we permit this in our society? Think about it for a minute. I mean, if you can identify as whoever you think you are, can you identify as an amputee? This is the madness that we're plummeting into, this utter madness. If we think there's one more slide, I think we're done. We get the next slide? I think we're done. We're done? Okay. So let me end our morning by talking about something that envelops this whole ideology. There's a worldview at work here that's been going on for the past 60 years or so, and what we're seeing today is the fruits of the labors of this movement. And it's a movement that's been called various names. Postmodernism is one of them. The other one is cultural Marxism. Cultural Marxism. So let me just say something about cultural Marxism. It's very different than classical Marxism of the old Soviet Union. Karl Marx believed that the problem to the world's ills was politics and economics. And Karl Marx also argued that the problem is that we have this oppressor-oppressed class. The oppressors are the bourgeoisie. Who are the bourgeoisie? The bourgeoisie are the working class, the capitalists, those who use the labor of the lower classes, the poor, the marginalized, to become rich. And the workers, Marx would refer to as the proletariat, the working class. And what he argued was this oppressor-oppressed paradigm has to be abolished. It has to be destroyed. You have to get rid of the oppressors so that we will have everything in common. That's what communism means, to have everything in common, a socialism where society lives together in harmony. You probably will know cultural Marxism, which comes out of Marxism, but it's a morphed phenomena. You probably know it by some of the following terms. You've probably been exposed to these terms. Terms like this. Diversity. Multiculturalism. Political correctness. Tolerance. Inclusion. Safe sex. Sensitivity training. Post-colonial studies. Social justice. Special interest groups, progressivism, the patriarchy, white privilege, toxic masculinity, safe space. You familiar with those terms? They're all Marxist terms. So where does this cultural Marxism, where does it come from? It finds its origins actually in 1919, right after World War I. What did Karl Marx argue? Karl Marx argued the cause of all societal ills was class distinctions, which created economic oppression on the working classes, the oppressed, from the ruling business classes, who are the oppressors, the privileged class. And he believed that the capitalists took advantage of these poor workers who worked for them. And what did Marx believe was the solution? He believed that only a revolution of the working class against the ruling class would bring harmony and peace to society. He also believed, Marx, that the obliteration of class distinctions around the world would eventually bring about what he called the utopian world, the utopia. Now, it's interesting that when you look at communism, it is simply the counterfeit of the gospel. So in communism, the world to come is utopia, where there's no more class distinctions. That is the atheistic equivalent of the kingdom of God that is to come. Christians believe in the Bible. Marxists believe in Das Kapital, the book that Marx wrote. Who was the high priest of communism? Karl Marx. Who is our great high priest of our confession? Jesus Christ. So Marx believed that when a major world war would come, which it came in 1914, the First World War, he believed that the working class would rise against their rulers, their employers, and they would topple them. But guess what happened in 1914 when the First World War came? Marxists actually believed at that time, in 1914, October, that the time for the revolution had arrived that Marx had predicted. The working class all over Europe would rise up to overthrow their capitalist rulers, and they would bring in communism. But guess what happened, folks, when 1914 came? It didn't happen. Millions of people from every working class lined up to register to join the army to fight for their respective countries. When a revolution did occur in Russia, the Bolshevik Revolution, which occurred in 1917, led by Vladimir Lenin, workers in other European countries did not support it. In fact, this was a shock to the Marxists, as history was not unfolding according to plan. Now, later, of course, we saw communist revolutions in China in 1949 with the Chinese Communist Revolution and then the Cuban Revolution, but they were not in the magnitude that they thought would happen across all of Europe and the world. And so what we have witnessed and continue to witness today, for example, if you look at North Korea, everyone keeps saying, well, that's not the real Marxism. North Korea is not the real Russia. That wasn't the real Marxism. China. And I'm thinking, how many millions of bodies have to be stacked up on top of each other for you to learn that Marxism just doesn't work? It's totalitarian. It's fascist. It's abrasive. It does not broker any rivals. So look at North Korea today. The leading persecutor of the Christian church is North Korea. More Christians are persecuted in North Korea than any other place in the world. The same thing with Cuba. People today, you will notice, will walk around with Che Guevara shirts and Che Guevara hats and say, Che Guevara was a freedom fighter. No, he wasn't. He was a Marxist. He killed people in cold blood to achieve the Marxist utopia in Cuba. But everyone today hails him as a hero because they don't know the history of Marxism. We also witnessed the utter collapse of the Soviet Union. Remember, those of us who are alive, I know I'm showing my age here. Most young people, when I mention these things, look at me with this stunned look on their face. Like if I mention Leave It to Beaver, they have no clue what I'm talking about. December 26, 1991, remember when the Soviet Union collapsed, sent shockwaves around the world? And the world, for the most part, thought that communism was dead, but it didn't die. Marxism actually morphed. So the old Marxist idea then had to be changed. It had to be nuanced. And how did this happen? The way to subvert the West, or the capitalist world, they believed, the new Marxists believed, was not through economics, as Karl Marx thought, but catch this, but through culture. You have to subvert the culture. It's very insidious, but two Marxist theorists, Antonio Gramsci in Italy and George Lukács in Hungary, viewed the problem to the advancement of Marxism as comprising of two major obstacles. Now remember, folks, here's the two major obstacles that must be removed according to the new Marxists. Number one, Western culture and its values have to be subverted. Number two, Christianity, which is the basis of Western democracy. The two pillars that must be removed is Western civilization, the culture of Western civilization, and Christianity. So it realized that to dismantle Christianity, if you want to dismantle Christianity, which has been around for 2,000 years, it's going to take some work. So how did they do it? They believed that the working classes were infected by Christianity, particularly in their view of the family. They were brought up to believe that if the family was a man and a woman and a child, this is the nuclear family, as it's called. And they realized that in order to subvert that, we need to subvert Christianity. And so the West, they believed, had to be de-Christianized. Now just look at what's going on in our government today. Christianity had to be uprooted, but they knew this wasn't going to happen overnight, so what did they do? They knew it was going to be a slow march, and they said, we can do this if we get in the academy, through the universities, where minds are influenced. So what did they do? It remained faithful to the atheistic worldview. And what did Karl Marx say about religion? One of his famous quotes that Marx said about religion was that he said, religion is the opiate of the people. It's opium. Religion is a drug. And what it does is it drugs people into thinking there's another world, there's another afterlife. It drugs them and it retards their ability to progress in this world because they're always thinking about, well, we're just passing through. The world to come is all that matters. And so we really don't have to commit everything here and now. And so he believed that that Christianity was an obstacle to the progress of human civilization. It was an illusion, a pie in the sky mentality. It hindered progress. And so by destroying Christianity, or the Judeo-Christian principles that the West is based on, the whole Western world, they argued, would inevitably collapse. So, whatever Christianity exalted, they said, must become deplorable. What Christianity found deplorable must be exalted. It's what Isaiah says, Isaiah 5:20. Woe to those who call evil good and call good evil. So notice again, whatever Christianity says is good, they said, we must declare to be deplorable. Christianity says marriage is good, we redefine marriage. We redefine marriage to the point that we redefine not just marriage, but we redefine the words husband and wife so that you can have two husbands. You can have two wives. So the husband can mean a woman and a wife can be a man. It doesn't matter. We start changing the meanings. And so this would be really what Friedrich Nietzsche called the transvaluation of all values. What he means there, the transvaluation of all values means the changing of all these values. You change them and you remove the content of their meaning. And so what Nietzsche was arguing for was nihilism. And what is nihilism? It's a Latin word that means that nihilism means there is no meaning in life. Remember what he said when I started off this morning. What did he say in the story of the madman? God is dead. And so if God is dead, then there is no meaning. There's no purpose. It's nihilism. Nothingness. And so the cultural Marxists said we need to deplore what Christianity says is good. What Christianity says is deplorable. We must say it's good. It's progressive. And so what did they do? They started putting an emphasis on women's rights. And so women are the oppressed. Men are the oppressors. And it's the patriarchy that has kept women subdued. They started emphasizing racial minorities. And so it was about black rights, aboriginal rights. It became about queer rights. It became about all types of rights except Christian rights. Even criminal rights, that criminals had to be treated with respect and we had to accommodate them. That prison was not a place of punishment. It was really a place to rehabilitate criminals. And so what we have forgotten is that justice is not about rehabilitation. We don't send criminals to prison because they're going to be rehabilitated. That's not what prison is about. Justice is not rehabilitative. Justice is retributive. It's about punishment. What rehabilitates is the health system. So what we're doing is we're changing our prisons into hospitals. We're assuming that if you throw a pedophile into prison, eventually he's going to be rehabilitated. And then when he comes out, what does he do? He reoffends. Because justice is not intended to rehabilitate people. Justice is intended to punish evildoers. You do the crime, you do the time. So one of these new Marxists, Lukács from Hungary, one of his first acts, now listen to this very carefully, folks. One of the first things he did was to introduce sex education into Hungary's public schools. And what did he do? He knew that if the West's traditional morals were destroyed, this would inevitably lead to the destruction of Western culture itself, including Christianity. He spoke of free love. He mocked Christian views of sex and monogamy. He showed graphic sexual images in his classes. He also encouraged rebellion against parents who were seen as part of the patriarchy. Your parents are brainwashed by the patriarchy. They're oppressors because they've learned that from Christianity. And you know, you've got your rights, kids. Don't let your parents tell you what to do because they're being influenced by the misogynist religion of Christianity. The family unit, they understood very well, was a Christian concept. The idea that a family was a man and a woman and a child. And so what did they do? Well, today, what do we find in our world? There's instances of family breakdowns. The rise in abortions are the fruits of this type of thinking. See, you kick back against Christianity, then what does that mean? It means, well, parents aren't the authority in the home. And so men are brought up to think that they have no responsibility to their children. And so fatherless marriages, the statistics are very clear. Children who grow up in a fatherless marriage, they have higher rates of suicide. They have higher rates of drug abuse. They have higher rates of juvenile delinquency. The United States is facing a huge epidemic in this area. But we keep praising the system that allows this to happen. And then we see things like abortion, where sexual responsibility is not necessary. You don't have to be married to engage in sexual relations. And if you have a baby, you can just go to the local abortion clinic and end that child's life. And so in the United States, you will notice that most abortion clinics run by Planned Parenthood, which was founded by Margaret Sanger, who was a eugenicist, who actually said we need more babies from the strong and less from the weak. She pushed for basically eugenics. She wanted to wipe out the black people in the United States. She had forced sterilization performed on black couples, particularly black men and women. And she also called for the weeding out of these undesirables. And if you notice any similarity to Adolf Hitler, you will realize that many of the things that the Nazi Party did and learned came right out of the United States, particularly from the Democratic parties. And so what we see here is an example of this. So cultural Marxism produced these tragedies, as we see today, yet at the same time they claimed to be the ones who really cared for the oppressed. And as I said with Margaret Sanger, she saw racial minorities as weeds in need of eradication. And if you really want to know what that comes from, go back to Charles Darwin. And Charles Darwin would talk about the survival of the fittest and how the weak have to be eliminated. And he actually predicted that the African races, this is Charles Darwin, the father of evolution, he actually predicted that the white European male would become the dominant species and that the races of Africa and the Aborigines of Australia would be wiped out. No one talks about that today, because to speak against evolution is to speak against the religion of the academy. And you speak against the religion of the academy, out you go. It's no surprise that many abortion clinics are located in areas with a higher population of minority groups, whether they're blacks or Latinos. Abortion is encouraged to diminish their population. They saw academia as the best venue to accomplish these goals of subverting the West and its foundations, particularly Christianity. And so the great universities, who do you think created the universities today? Who created all the great universities? The church. And so if the church created the great universities, you've got to dismantle the church. And by doing so, you could dismantle the universities. Look at what's happening across the globe in Berkeley, for instance, where free speech is being shot down, where speakers who are right-wing are being shut down because they believe in conservative values. Even Richard Dawkins was shocked when he went to Berkeley. He got a taste of his own medicine. He went to Berkeley. They shut him down because he spoke against Islam. He was shocked that they would shut him down. Well, it's because you don't talk against gays and you don't talk against Muslims. You talk about Christians, you're a hero. Right? The University, Ontario College of Art in Toronto, had a prayer mat, a Muslim prayer mat, with some Arabic words written on it. The Muslims were so offended, they told them, this has to be removed. Not only did the college remove the offensive image, the prayer rug with the Arabic letters on it, or the picture of a nude woman on it, and not only did they remove it, they apologized. But yet, it's okay to have a flax filled with urine with a crucifix in it. That's a piece of art. Or a picture of the Madonna and Child made of elephant dung. That's called art. But don't you dare pick on Muhammad. Don't you dare criticize Islam. And our Prime Minister is right in that boat with them. M103, Motion 103 was just passed in Ottawa. Not recently, but months ago. What's M03-1 about? It's a motion condemning religious discrimination, including Islamophobia. Well, what's Islamophobia? The motion doesn't define Islamophobia. I've been asking our MPs, what is Islamophobia? They can't answer the question. What is Islamophobia? Is it okay to criticize Islam, or is it not okay? Because if it's not okay to criticize Islam, then we shouldn't criticize Christianity either. We shouldn't criticize any religion. And this word, Islamophobia, homophobia, transphobia, all of these are Marxist terms to shut down your free voice. And so when someone says to me, well, you're a homophobe, a friend of mine, she's a lesbian, we get into these heated discussions, and she'll say, well, you're a homophobe. And I said, you're a heterophobe. She says, what's a heterophobe? I said, what's a homophobe? I said, what's a phobia? A phobia is an irrational fear of something. I'm not afraid of you. I'm talking to you. I don't have an irrational fear of you. Are you a Christophobe? You fear Christianity? So a phobia is irrational. I don't have an irrational fear of you. I mean, I have a rational fear of Islam taking over our country. That's rational, to be concerned for your family and your nation. So these are terms that are created by the left to shut you down. No one wants to be called a homophobe. My goodness, I can lose my job over that. And so when I'm on Twitter and there's these tweet debates we go back and forth on, when someone attacks Christians, I said, you're a greasy Christophobe. They never respond because what are they going to say? I'm playing their game. I'm using their own language. You're a greasy Christophobe. You're a vile Christophobe. What are they going to say? They come out and attack white people. Oh, white privilege. I said, you're a racist. So I'm just playing their game. Well, how? If you can talk against white privilege, can I talk about black privilege? Well, no, that's racist. Well, then why are you talking about white privilege? You see the double standards there? It happens all the time. And so where do we see this type of thinking arising? It's rising in our universities, exactly as planned. In 1923... inspired by Lukács, that Hungarian Marxist, a group of German Marxists established a think tank at Frankfurt University in Germany called the Institute for Social Research. This institute soon came to be known simply as the Frankfurt School. And this school would become the creator of this thinking that we see today. Other prominent members of the Frankfurt School are people like Max Horkheimer, Theodor Adorno, Wilhelm Reich, Eric Fromm, and Herbert Marcuse. They began to engineer the very methods that would subvert Christianity and Western civilization. Now, things didn't turn too well for the Frankfurt School in the 1930s because Adolf Hitler came to power in Germany in 1933. And so for obvious reasons, they had to flee because Adolf Hitler, by the way, this really gets the rattles the cage of the leftist media. Adolf Hitler was a socialist. And the name of his party was the National Socialist Party. That was the name of the Nazi Party. And so, what does the West always espouse? Socialism. They want to create a social state. What did Hitler want to create? A social state. But who do they call Hitler? They call Trump Hitler. And yet Trump is the first president to move the embassy, the American embassy, from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. All the other ones talked about it. It was already passed in Congress in the 90s that they would recognize that they would do this. Trump was the only one, you know, Trump? Trump was the only one who had the gall to do it. And Obama said, yes, Jerusalem is the eternal state of Israel. Bill Clinton, yes, Jerusalem is the eternal state Jerusalem is the eternal city of Israel. But they never did anything. But Trump's Hitler, and yet he gives the Jewish state their capital and recognizes it by moving the embassy there. But he's Hitler. Did Hitler like Jews? I don't think so. But you see, this is how they work. If you oppose the left, they call you racist, homophobic, they'll call you Hitler. They'll call you Nazis. I mean, when you look at Mr. Butts, that's his name, the secretary for Justin Trudeau, he actually said that by attacking Trudeau's trip to India, where he was playing Mr. Dress-Up, when he went over to India, he said, all these media outlets that are attacking Prime Minister Trudeau, you're nothing but Nazis. He called them Nazis just for saying, what's with this guy jumping up and down to Indian music and dressing up like he's going to a Hindu wedding? They're Nazis. Why? Because you see, that's the way the left works. They throw names at you, epithets at you. They never tell you where they stand. They just throw epithets. You're a fascist. You're a racist. You're a homophobe. And that's how they try to silence you, by throwing these things at you. And guess where they went? When Hitler came to power, guess where the Frankfurt School moved to? They moved to New York City. And here's where it gets interesting. Instead of destroying traditional Western culture in Germany and the rest of Europe, they turned their attention to destroying North America by going to New York. But then, in the United States, they changed their name to Critical Theory. You go to any university today, you'll have a department for Critical Theory. Which was, what theory? What is the theory? The theory was this. Criticize and denigrate every traditional institution, starting with the nuclear family, by redefining the family. So now we got same-sex marriage. We got Bill C-16, which basically was the federal law recognizing transgender as one of the identity groups in the Criminal Code of Canada, so that if I don't call someone Zer or Z, they can have me charged with a hate crime. Now, after this bill was just passed, Bill C-16. Bill 28 in Ontario argued for the same thing. They also wrote a series on studies in prejudice, which they argued was anyone who believes in traditional Western culture was prejudiced, fascist, sexist, racist, mentally ill, and had a presumption of privilege. Cultural Marxism also tells you what they are against, not necessarily what they are for. And so critical theory has created the following: cultural studies, women's studies, Aboriginal studies, African-American studies, LGBTQ studies, transgender studies, post-colonial studies. And all the students who go to university and study in these departments, you know where they are today? They're driving buses or working at a grocery store. These are meaningless courses. Who's going to want to hire someone who studied African-American studies or women's studies? I mean, how many women's study programs do you need? But most of these students are paying, they're going into debt, paying for these courses in university, and going nowhere. So, who are the oppressors here? Western civilization and Christianity are the oppressors. Who are the victim? Women. Christianity is misogynist. It's a male-centered religion. God is father. God has male pronouns. God has male titles. African Americans were enslaved by white Christians who worship a white Jesus. The Christian white man killed the Native Americans. The LGBTQ community is condemned by Christians. There's a deep-seated anger against the West and Christianity. That you could feel it. The hatred is so tangible. In the 1950s, Herbert Marcuse created a coalition of black students and feminist women and homosexuals and told them that the reason for their oppression was Western civilization and the influence of Christianity. He defined their struggle in an oppressor-oppressed paradigm. That's basically Marxism to the core. Oppressor-oppressed. And so they made their way, and this is very, very important, folks, cultural Marxism made their way from New York to Hollywood during the Second World War. Why? They went to the media and entertainment world where they believed that they could promulgate their ideology more effectively. We see the fruits of this today in Hollywood, which, by the way, if you've noticed, in Hollywood, the sewage is backed up. It's become the most powerful leftist ideological medium to communicate all forms of sexual perversions as normative, with a systematic hatred against anything deemed Christian, which is derisively mocked in our film screens, in the media, while other religions are exalted as noble, victimized, and being marginalized by the West. What do you see coming out of Hollywood? Will and Grace. What's Will and Grace all about? Two gay guys and a woman. Look at what's coming out of Hollywood, and you will see it is an ideology that says sex is an open field. It doesn't matter who you're with. And you'll notice, even the Black Panther movie that just came out, it all has been politicized. It's all about black rights. Black lives matter. And when I say something like all lives matter, I'm called a racist. Hello? All lives matter. No, you're a racist. You're against blacks. What? I said all lives matter. That includes black lives. They instituted studies of prejudice where Christianity was the enemy. Christianity was the fascist. You'll hear Trump being called fascist all the time by the leftist media. The Christians are labeled as fascists. There, even recently on The View, it was said that Christians who believe that Jesus talks to them are mentally ill. Christians are mentally ill people because they believe God can talk to them. She would never say that about a Muslim. Because she knows her job would be not, she would be gone out of a job. After World War II, members of the Frankfurt School moved back to Germany. Herbert Marcuse stayed in America and he wrote a book called Eros and Civilization. And in this book, he argued for free sex, which bloomed in the 1960s. With the sexual revolution and with Woodstock. He said it was a type of sex without restraints. He first coined the phrase, make love, not war, which was the motto of the hippie movement. Marcuse also argued for what was called liberating tolerance. He defined as tolerance all ideas coming from the left and all ideas that come from the right are intolerant. And you'll find, folks, that people today who claim to be the most tolerant are in fact the most intolerant when their views are being challenged. And so special interest groups who champion tolerance, like the same-sex groups, you'll always find they'll say, we believe in tolerance. But the moment you say, I disagree with you, you are the bad guy. You're a fascist. you need to be shut down. Marcuse also spoke about polymorphous perversity as something that is to be praised. Remember, what Christianity condemns, we praise. He destigmatized non-heterosexual relations, like homosexual relationships, and he basically stigmatized heterosexual relations. So that male and female, they're the problem. That relation is problematic. That's oppressive. Humans must ultimately be, he said, autonomous. We're back to Genesis 3. How about post-colonialism blames all the world's ills on the West and their oppressive incursion into other cultures, imperialism, the Middle East, India, Africa, and how they exploited these cultures, like the Aboriginals. They say the Westerners, they exploited us. The Indians will claim that the British, when they came into India, they exploited them. They blamed the British as the creators of the caste system, which is absolutely horrific. I mean, it's mind-boggling that they even got away with that. The caste system is Hindu to the core. It's a Hindu religious doctrine. The British didn't come up with that. And in fact, the British, when they came to India, created the schools. They introduced engineering into India. They were still using the wheel to make clothes in India when the British were there. They introduced technology. They brought universities. They brought hospitals and so forth. What they never mentioned is that the British abolished sati. S-A-T-I. What is sati? Sati was the practice of a widow being burned alive on her husband's funeral pyre. And so when the husband was being cremated, the widow's duty was to die with him, not die with him, but die on his funeral pyre, throw herself onto the funeral pyre, and die by cremation. The British outlawed that. What did the British also outlaw? They also outlawed the practice of throwing infants to crocodiles, which was going on in India as well. But no one talks about that. They talk about oppressors. The slave trade is based on the West. Whenever you hear about the slave trade, what do you always hear about? The Europeans, the Portuguese, the Dutch, the Americans, the British. And we always hear about the slave trade was because of the West, but no one talks about the Eastern slave trade, which happened first, by the way. What's the Eastern slave trade? The Muslims came in and conquered Africa. They took all the blacks, they castrated the males, and kept the women as concubines, and moved them into Saudi Arabia to work as slaves, and they sold them in the marketplace. And by the way, slavery still exists in the Muslim world. And they sell slaves in the markets, black slaves. But the West doesn't talk about that. Why? Because it goes against the party line. It's the West who's responsible for the slave trade, not the Muslims. They're a minority. They're oppressed. We're the oppressors. So why is it that we never hear about the Eastern slave trade? Why do we always hear about, you know, the Western slave trade? Remember the movie Roots back in the 80s? I know I'm showing my age again. Remember the movie Roots? The whole thing was distorted. A lot of what happened in that movie did not actually happen. What they don't tell you about is how the Muslim slave owners sold slaves to the Westerners. Because the Westerners weren't coming into Africa and going looking for them. The Muslims would bring them to the shores to sell them. But what they also don't tell you is that blacks were enslaving other blacks in Africa. There were tribals, blacks tribal groups enslaving other tribal groups. But you see, we don't want to talk about blacks enslaving blacks. That doesn't fit the Marxist agenda. It's always the white man's fault. You see, folks, the truth is what sets us free. No one wants to talk about it. So when I mention this and I say it's a historical fact, racist! Racist! Let me finish my comment. Racist! You're a racist! You're Hitler! You're Hitler! You're Nazi! So they throw epithets. It's called ad hominem. They're attacking the person rather than the argument. The oppression of the indigenous people, the Native Americans, they blame it on the West. No one talks about how the Iroquois wiped out the Hurons. No one talks about the fact that a lot of these Aboriginal groups in Canada and the U.S. massacred each other. So much for the noble savage. They massacred each other. They did the very same things that all countries did. 9/11. Why did 9/11 happen? It's the West's fault. We got our nose into Middle Eastern affairs. It has nothing to do with Islam. It's because the West went into the Middle East and they got angry at us. How about the Crusades? How often do we keep hearing about the Crusades? how awful the Crusades were, how the Crusades went, and they took on these poor Muslims in the Middle East, and they raped, and they pillaged, and they did this. What they never tell you is that the Crusades were called 400 years after the Islamic conquest were taking over all of the Middle East, all of North Africa, and they went as far as Spain and Portugal. For 400 years, the Muslims kept invading land after land after land. And finally, in the turn of the millennium, the first millennium, they realized if we don't stop these guys, they're going to take over all of Europe. And so the Crusades was a defensive response to the Islamic conquests. Who went out of Arabia and started conquering and taking over all these Christian lands? Iran was a Christian land. Syria was a Christian land. Africa, North Africa, Alexandria in Egypt was a bastion of Christianity. Augustine was the bishop of Hippo in North Africa. Tertullian was from Africa. All of North Africa today is Muslim. Why? The Muslims invaded it, took it over. Turkey was the Eastern Empire, the Byzantium Kingdom. It's all Muslim today. Why don't we talk about reparations? The Muslims should give all those lands back to the Christians. But we want the West to make reparations with the Aboriginals. And in the States, there's black people saying, you should give them their homes. You white folks, you should give us your homes. Repatriate, financially repatriate us for the slavery that you've inflicted on us. Well, what about all those blacks that enslaved you in Africa? Well, we don't want to talk about that. What about the Muslims who came and took you? And we don't want to talk. We want to talk about the West. And so, what do we find here? What we find, folks, and I'm sure I've gone a little over, but this is a really important topic. The story we're being taught is that everyone lived happily ever after until the West got involved. Whitey destroyed it all for us. And so, another reason why the West cannot come to terms with terrorism. If you look around your world, there's terrorism almost every day. Just yesterday in France, a Muslim terrorist went into a mall and got shot down. And I applaud the police force for doing that. One less terrorist in the world. We had one here in Ottawa a couple of years ago. No one really talks about that as much today. But there are more coming. And that's because the West has refused to identify the problem. They will say, well, these guys, well, they have mental illness. So why is it all happening by Muslims, though? Is there a wave of mental illness in the Islamic communities? Don't Buddhists have mental illness? Don't Christians suffer from mental illness? But why is it always Islamic? Because they don't understand the concept of jihad. And so what do we find here? All societal ills are because of Christianity. Remember Orlando when that Muslim guy went in there and shot all those people in the Orlando gay club? You remember the ACLU? You remember who they blamed for that? You guys know the ACLU, right, in the United States? Atheist, Communist, Liberals United. You know who they blame for the Orlando shooting? Right-wing Christians. Because of their homophobia. And guess who did the shooting? It was a Muslim. Who did it while he was saying, Allahu Akbar. Allah is great. We also see cultural Marxism at work in Western Europe, where many Europeans right now are absolutely clueless about the Islamic threat. Angela Merkel is an absolute disaster in Germany as they're taking over their country. There are places in Germany where you cannot go anymore. There are no-go zones. Their Sharia law is being imposed. England is in big, big, big trouble. Anyone who speaks against Islam in England are kicked out of the country. Lauren Southern, who is a right-wing columnist, went over there. She was prevented from entering the country because she was a critic of Islam. Robert Spencer, whom I know from Jihad Watch, when he came to Canada, he was being interviewed by the Border Patrol for 4 hours. And they were reading through his notes to see what he was saying about Islam. And he said, they said to him, why are you promoting this hatred? He says, To criticize an ideology is not hatred. That's academic freedom. And then when they took the Quran out of his suitcase, he says, if you want to talk about hate literature, read that book. They didn't take too kindly to that. But what we're finding is Europe is falling apart. And this has also been in the works. Islamic jihadis have been saying for the longest time, they're going to recover Europe. What they had lost, they're going to recover. And so we see migrants coming to the West. And a lot of folks ask me, well, aren't you being very un-Christian by opposing migrants. Well, I'm not against helping legitimate refugees, but when you have a high number of young men coming to a certain country and they leave their wives and their children behind and they're living off the welfare system, and the Islamic religion teaches the concept of immigration to Islamicize the countries that you go to, then I'm very concerned. And also, ISIS said they were going to send 50,000 terrorist operatives through the migration systems into the West. I'd be concerned. We've seen them coming out. We've seen these migrants, so-called migrants, actually committing terrorist acts. And they're here in Canada. There are terrorist cells in Canada. Make no mistake about it. They're being investigated by the RCMP. And there's going to be more of them, because the guys who went out to fight ISIS and burn people alive and cut their heads off, Trudeau is welcoming them back without prosecution. Because according to Mr. Trudeau, a Canadian is a Canadian is a Canadian. And guess what, Mr. Trudeau? A terrorist is a terrorist is a terrorist. And if one drop of blood falls, you are going to be held accountable for that. For any Canadian blood that falls. So, what do we see then? The irony here is that you will have this Islamic incursion into the West, this hatred that you see for Israel. You'll notice that almost every Muslim country in the world hates Israel. The UN has called Israel one of the worst violators of human rights, which is very strange because Israel is the only democratic country in the Middle East. And what you find is you will find LGBTQ communities supporting Muslims who are against Israel. And here's the irony. Under Islamic law, these homosexuals would be thrown off from the highest building and stoned to death. And so people say, well, why is there this unholy alliance between Muslims and homosexuals? It's very simple, folks. It's what Lenin called, Vladimir Lenin said. He said, the end will justify the means. It's what he called the useful idiots for the cause. You use the blind as idiots, they're useful idiots, until you achieve your ends. And once you achieve your ends, you destroy them. That's what Lenin did, and that's what Stalin did. Once you get into power, you destroy them. You see this in the church as well, folks, unfortunately. There's cultural Marxism in our churches. You'll see churches emphasizing social justice. You'll see the emergent church, people like Brian McLaren, Steve Chalk, and Bruxy Cavey. That's right. Roxy Cavey, who is a heretic, who denies not only the infallibility of Scripture, he denies penal substitution. He denies that Christ died as an atonement for our sins. He follows what's called the moral theory of the atonement, which basically says Jesus died to show us how much God loved us as a moral example. Anyone who denies the cross, anyone who denies the atonement of Christ is a heretic. And yet, he speaks freely. In seminaries, in colleges, in churches, and he's lionized as a great evangelical, which he is not. He's a big fan of open theists like Gregory Boyd, who denies God has full knowledge of future events. God does not know the future. And this is what, these are the people that Christianity and seminaries are propping up. So you see this, for example, the emergent church will talk about things like the uncertainty of the gospel. They're very anti-theology. Theology doesn't matter. It's about doing good works. It's not about theology. It's how you treat the poor. Steve Chalk, for instance, says the idea that God sent his son and that God poured his wrath on his son, he said this is nothing but cosmic child abuse. And yet these people are getting passes as evangelicals. And their books are selling. White privilege. Remember that term, folks. You're going to hear more and more of it. White privilege means that you're a white, particularly male Christian. You're the most privileged. And because you are the most privileged, you have to face the fact that you've contributed to the oppression of thousands of people. So a young white kid goes to school and he's being told, you know, because of you and your color, you know that you have colonized people. And the guy's saying, I'm just trying to finish my bachelor's degree. And he's made to feel guilty for something that people did in the past. Think about that for a minute. We don't apply that to anyone. The other thing is this, folks. The cultural Marxists emphasize group rights over personal rights. It's not about the individual. It's about group identity. So if you're part of a group identity that's oppressed, yay. You're gay, you're part of an oppressed group. You're black, you're part of an oppressed group. You're Muslim, you're part of an oppressed group. You're white, you're the oppressor. It's not about people, it's about groups. Even nation states, this globalism, we want a one world global government. No borders. Do you know who created the idea of a nation state? God created the idea of the nation state. What did he say to Abram? Get you out of your country. I will make of you a great nation. Who set the boundaries of all the nations? God did. Acts 17. God creates what? Unity out of diversity. From the diversity of the nations, God creates the church. So before the throne of God, what are we going to see? People from every tribe, every tongue, every language, all together worshiping God and the Lamb. So what does social justice do, folks? Social justice pushes people to the corners. It puts them in the margins. What has this done to a lot of our white male children today? Well, look at the data is scary. Suicide trends in the 1990s to 2018. 77% of all suicides are men. And there's a disproportionate high amount of white men that commit suicide. Are these oppressors? Incarceration in the United States, over 90% of inmates are male. More boys in the United States are failing school than girls are. Girls today, or women today, are making more income than their husbands. I can vouch for that. I know other men that I work with whose wives make much more than they do. But we keep hearing about the wage gap because men are oppressors. We've got to get rid of the patriarchy. There's more women today who are graduating from postgraduate studies than men are. The stats are clearly showing a rise in women graduating from law, medicine, at a higher rate than men are. But what do we keep hearing about? Well, we keep hearing about white male oppression and the patriarchy and discrimination against women. And yet the stats are showing that these so-called oppressed males are the ones who are committing suicide and who are graduating at a far lesser rate than women are. And I'm going to leave you with this. This is my final thought. They've even created a matrix of oppression wheel, the wheel of oppression. You've heard of the Wheel of Fortune, right? Remember Vanna White with the Wheel of Oppression, Wheel of Fortune? Well, now they've got these charts, and it's amazing how they do this. They say that the most privileged groups on this wheel are the following. White people, heterosexual people, rich upper class people, Protestants, adults. That basically covers all of you here, most of you, I suppose. Okay, let's look at the targeted oppressed group. Who are the targeted oppressed groups? Asians, black, Latino, and Native people. They're oppressed. Who also is oppressed? Well, heterosexuals are privileged. Well, who's oppressed? Transgender, genderqueer, intersex people. Lesbians, gay men. Working class. Can you hear Marx now? The working class? That's Marx. The working class, the poor people, they're oppressed. While Protestants are the privileged class, guess who are religiously the oppressed class? Jews, Muslims are oppressed? You ever been to a Muslim country? You know who's oppressed in Muslim countries? Christians. They're being murdered in Christian countries. They're treated like garbage. In Pakistan, they're relegated to street cleaners and cleaning toilets. They call them, one of the idioms, the expressions for Christians in Pakistan, they're called street sweepers in Urdu. Saudi Arabia looks pretty oppressed, doesn't it? But that's what they tell us. Muslims are oppressed. Hindus are oppressed. And yet there's Hindu fundamentalists in India today who are killing Christians. Did you know that? They're not only facing Muslims, but Christians in India are being massacred by Hindu fundamentalists who tell us that all roads lead to God, all religions are true, and yet they're killing Christians. Why? They want to create a Hindu state. They want no Christians in India. And so, there's the paradigm, the oppressed and the oppressor. And folks, this is nothing but Marxist jargon. And if we don't turn the tide, our government is moving in that direction. You know what Justin Trudeau said about China? He says, I respect the dictatorial government of China. Well, he should, because his father also admired China and Fidel Castro from Cuba. Remember that beautiful eulogy he gave for Fidel Castro? He became a laughingstock around the world. How can a prime minister from a democratic country say he admires the dictatorial government of a regime in China that has one of the highest human rights abuses? You know, in China, when they execute someone, they send the bill for the bullet to the family to pay for the bullet that they used to kill their loved one, because you cost the state money because of the belligerence of your family member. No one talks about that today. No one cares to talk about that. And yet India has one of the highest female infanticide rates. They commit more abortions against little girls than any other country. China also has a very high rate of female abortion. Where are the feminists today condemning this? If the feminists stand for women's rights, then why are they not standing up for this deliberate sex-selective abortion? And now in China, they've got a huge problem, an epidemic. They don't have enough women around. They have an over number of boys, very little girls, and this is going to cause some major crises. Now, why do you think here in the West, in 50 years' time, Canada is going to be predominantly non-English, non-white? It's very simple. The birth rates among North Americans have gone down, about 1.3 per family on average. We've encouraged abortion. We've taught families that children are a hindrance, they're a burden. Enjoy your life. Don't have kids. Women's rights are protected. Have an abortion whenever you feel like it. So as our birth rates are going down, guess what? Toys R Us is shutting down. You know one of the reasons that they're shutting down? Demographics have dropped. People aren't going there anymore like they used to. They've openly said demographics have dropped. And they're filing for bankruptcy. But guess which birth rates are rising? Muslim families. 6 to 8 kids. Do the math. In 50 years' time, who's going to run the show? And what have we done? We've prided ourselves in our liberation. Children are nothing but a burden when the Bible says that they are a heritage from the Lord. And so the West is reaping what she has sown. And that's where we come in. The church has to stand up. We have to be the salt of the earth, the light of the world. Call your MPs. Call your MPPs. Get on their case. Tell them how you feel. At least do something, for heaven's sake. Some Christians tell me we should do this, we should do that, we should do this. Okay, we're going to have a protest at Queen's Park. Well, I'm kind of busy that day. Good talkers. They got all the best ideas. But when it comes to putting the money where their mouth is, they're nowhere to be found. And so while we sit around with our hands, sitting on our hands doing nothing, and we're hoping that one day, if you're a dispensationalist, that Jesus is going to come back at any moment and I'll fly away by and by. Well, who cares about this world? I'm not going to be here anyway. And so what have we done? We've disassociated ourselves from our world. We've disassociated ourselves from our culture. And we are leaving a world in tatters for our children and our grandchildren. They're the ones who are going to reap the whirlwind. The tide can be changed. And we've got to pray for God to send a revival to change the church, get the church to wake up, stop slumbering, stop sleeping, stop treating the church like a social club. Jesus Christ said, you are the light of the world. You have an obligation to the world. Blessed are you when you take a stand for righteousness' sake. And so you have a right to tell your MPs, if you remain this way, I'm not voting for you in the next election. They need your votes. That's how they run, is on your votes. And so let's do something. It doesn't take much to write a letter, to email a letter to your MPs or MPPs, but for heaven's sake, please do something. There's a famous saying by a Lutheran pastor. He said, when they came against the Jews, no one spoke up for the Jews. When they came against the union workers, no one spoke up against the union workers. And then when they came against me, there was no one to stand up and speak for me. We have to take a stand in our day and in our age.
Close our time in prayer. Lord, we want to thank you for this morning. We want to thank you for what our brother Tony has shared. And it's hard for us to hear these things. It's hard for us to have our eyes open to the ravages of sin in our society. But we do thank you for that. We do thank you as well that we have a message to tell. We have a God who reigns over all. Indeed, Jesus Christ is reigning at your right hand for the church. And we do pray that we would be that salt and light in the world, that we would advocate for righteousness, that we would pray for you to rend the heavens and come down by your Holy Spirit to build in your people a greater passion for you and a greater passion for righteousness, a greater passion to spread your gospel. So, Lord, may we leave this place not discouraged, but equipped and looking to you as the God who reigns over all. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.